Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to New Heights Show on Education. This is your host, Kathy Woodring. Today's show topic is the Albany Plan of Union. First, the tensions between British rule and colonial independence will be continued from the last episode. Please remember that you can call in to speak with me or any of our hosts live on the air by calling 347-633-9225. Please remember to push follow us for updates on upcoming shows, or you can visit our website to see host bios and keep track of your favorite hosts and our shows. New Heights continues to offer its biweekly enrichment day and or co-op classes. Next class will be on April 25th, 2014 from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Classes will be held in Defiance at the Zion Lutheran Church. Tutors and or teachers are needed. We are in need of tutors and or teachers in Defiance and Putnam County. Anyone that would like to volunteer should contact us directly. There are also some paid opportunities. We currently need reading tutors. New Heights is happy to report that we have found a building for our library. We will announce the location once we are settled, which may be in a week or two. We are very thankful to Lynn and Kathy Bergman, Mary Ann Hurst, and Brian Corr for their kindness and generosity. New Heights Educational Group is proud to announce that we now have a new online volunteer. Do you need help in math? Vu Wong is currently an international student at Walnut Grove Christian School, Fort Mill, South Carolina. Before arriving in the United States, he lived in Vietnam with his parents and younger sister and did his 10th grade with the highest average grade in his class. At Walnut Grove Christian School, he got an 80 out of 80 in math in this year's PSAT and 800 out of 800 in most of the practical SAT tests. He is now in grade 11 and hoping to get a college scholarship. Huang is a volunteer math tutor with New Heights Educational Group. He loves to help needed students with his best competence. He is looking forward to working as a volunteer math tutor in these areas: geometry, algebra 1 and 2, and pre-calculus. New Heights Educational Group is pleased to have such an educated and industrious person such as Huang participating with New Heights activities. Now back to today's show topic, the Albany Plan of Union. The last episode ended with describing the, quote, Boston Massacre, end quote. This article from Solar Navigator states that a conservative reaction set in New York, and at the end of the summer of 1770, New York abandoned non-importation, which soon collapsed across the colonies, leaving only an unwillingness to drink tax tea. For the next 3 years, it looked as if the danger of a colonial revolt had been averted. Lord North made little or no effort to interfere in the colonies, while in America, intercolony rivalry revived, as typified by the activities of the Green Mountain Boys. However, this image was false. The returning to even grudging loyalty only lasted for as long as the British did not act. Expectations and attitudes on the two sides of the Atlantic were too far apart for any permanent understanding to be established within the empire. It was this gulf that gave the issue that finally led war its potency. The crisis was caused by the financial losses suffered by the British East India Company as it moved from trading concern to political authority. Part of Lord North's plan for restoring the fortunes of the company, seen as vital for reducing the national debt, was a scheme for disposing of the company's tea surplus. Previously, East India Company tea had to be imported into England, where it paid 1s tax before being exported to America by English middlemen, who paid a further 3d. North gave the company permission to sell direct to the American colonies, paying only the 3D duty. If implemented, this would have halved the cost of the tea in the colonies, from 20s per pound to only 10s. This new policy worried the radicals in the colonies. The boycott on tea was the only protest against British rule that was still effective, and there was a great fear amongst radical opinion that this new cheap tea would end the boycott. In New York and Philadelphia, where smuggling was rife, the boycott of taxed tea was secure. But Boston was seen as a weak point. Too well policed for smuggling, the radicals were afraid that if tea was landed in the port, it would be drunk across the colonies, breaking the boycott. Their reaction was to prevent the tea from being landed. On the 16th of December 1773, a group of Boston radicals, dressed as Indian braves, dumped thousands of pounds worth of tea into the harbor, a protest immortalized as the Boston Tea Party. The British reaction was critical. A low-key response could have defused the situation, but instead, Lord North decided on confrontation. The reaction to the events in Boston in 1770 led the government to expect that their other colonies would once again repudiate radical action in Massachusetts. However, the actions taken by Lord North's ministry could not have been more offensive to colonial sensibilities. Early in 1774, a series of acts called the Coercive or Intolerable Acts in the colonies were passed in an attempt to restore order in Boston and Massachusetts. The port was closed until the lost tea had been paid for. The governor was given the power to transfer trials to Britain. Boston was made to provide barracks for troops inside the town. Finally, the constitution of the colony was changed. Massachusetts had a two-chamber system, with an elected House of Representatives who had the power to appoint the upper house, or councilors. This was now changed so that the Crown could appoint the councilors. Rather than isolating Massachusetts, these acts united the colonies in protest. In particular, British interference with the constitution of one of the colonies was felt to threaten all. At the same time, news of the Quebec Act reached the colonies. This was a sensible response to the problem facing in Canada of ruling a largely French population only recently conquered. It allowed for tolerance of French Catholicism, even giving the Catholic majority a place on the new Canadian Council. Canada's borders were also expanded to include the areas of Illinois and Detroit, where there was already a French population. In the 13 colonies, this act caused great hostility. Once again, westward expansion had been blocked. Worse, or at least as far as New England was concerned, was the tolerant attitude to Catholicism. The colonial response was the First Continental Congress, which met in Philadelphia in September 1774. When this Congress met, it demanded the repeal of all colonial legislation passed since 1763. Until this demand was agreed to, Congress agreed to block all imports and exports to and from Britain other than those crops which the southern states depended on, to refuse to pay any taxes to Britain, and to prepare to resist any British troops. However, the Congress did not, at this stage, want independence. Despite this, conflict was now inevitable. In British eyes, Congress was an illegal body, not to be dealt with. Even so, opinion was split on how to respond with American discontent. In November, George III was already certain that there would be fighting, but there were still conciliatory voices in Parliament. In America, General Gage, now governor of Massachusetts, as well as commander-in-chief of the British forces in North America, warned that the discontent was widespread and requested large-scale reinforcements. But back in Britain, the scale of the trouble was not yet appreciated. Lord North was not alone in seeing Massachusetts as the heart of the problem, and in April 1775, that idea was reinforced by the first fighting. There was a lot of tension involved before the first fighting. The Albany Plan of Union was a plan to create a unified government for the 13 colonies, as stated in the following article placed in Wikipedia. The Albany Plan of Union was a proposal to create a unified government for the 13 colonies, suggested by Benjamin Franklin, then a senior leader, age 48, and a delegate from Pennsylvania. At the Albany Congress in July 1754 in Albany, New York, more than 20 representatives of several northern and mid-Atlantic colonies had gathered to plan their defense related to the French and Indian War, the front in the North and North America of the Seven Years' War between Great Britain and France. The plan represented one of multiple early attempts to form a union of the colonies, quote, under one government as far as might be necessary for the defense and other general important purposes, end quote. The Congress spent much of its time discussing and debating the Albany Plan recommended by a committee that reviewed the different plans offered by delegates. Its members chose Franklin's plan with some modifications. Benjamin Chew, then the young lawyer from Dover, Pennsylvania, who served as the secretary, and Richard, both from Philadelphia, were among the members of this committee and the Pennsylvania delegation. It went beyond the original scope of the Congress, which was to develop a plan of defense related to near-term threats by France. The northern colonies were most concerned as they shared a border with the French colony in Canada, but the mid-Atlantic colonies were also affected by differing loyalties of various Native American nations, usually related to their trading with France or Great Britain. The New England and Northern Tier colonies had long been subject to raiding from Canada during the times of conflict. The Albany Plan was the first unification of the colonies. The plan called for a general government to be administered by a president general, to be appointed and supported by the crown, and a grand council to be chosen by the representatives of the colonial assemblies. Also, after the larger group of delegates discussed their issues and objections, they resolved most of them and adopted the plan. They sent copies of letters to each of the colonial assemblies and to the British Board of Trade in London. The colonial assemblies and the British representatives rejected the Albany Plan. Benjamin Franklin wrote of the rejections, "The colonial assemblies and most of the people were narrowly provincial in outlook, mutually jealous and suspicious of any central taxing authority. Many in the British government, already wary of some of the strong-willed colonial assemblies, disliked the idea of consolidating additional power into their hands. They preferred that the colonies concentrate on their part in the forthcoming military campaign. The Board of Trade never sought official approval for the plan from the Crown. They proposed that the colonial governors, along with some members of their respective councils, order the raising of troops and building of forts to be funded by the Treasury of Great Britain. This amount would later have to be repaid, and Parliament imposed a tax on the colonies to pay for the defenses in North America. The proposed Galloway Plan, presented at the First Continental Congress, bore striking resemblance to the Albany Plan. It was submitted by conservative loyalists and quickly rejected in favor of more radical proposals. In the aftermath of the Revolutionary War, the Albany Plan of Union inspired some aspects of the draft Articles of Confederation. U.S. History.com further describes the Albany Plan, stating that British officials believed that a North American war with France was imminent and urged colonial leaders to prepare for the common defense. A meeting was held in Albany in the spring of 1754 and was attended by native leaders, colonial officials, and representatives from seven of the British colonies. Discussions at the Albany Congress focused on two primary issues, the Iroquois and the Albany Plan of Union. The Iroquois, often referred to as the Six Nations, had traditionally maintained stronger relationships with the French and the British. But by the 1740s, the British were actively engaged in trade with many tribes in the Ohio Valley. Native leaders were not anxious to commit themselves to siding with one power or the other, preferring to wait and see if they could ally with the winning side. Nevertheless, the Albany officials were successful with winning tepid commitment from the Iroquois in return for substantial bribes of supplies and weapons. Benjamin Franklin and Massachusetts Governor Thomas Hutchinson drafted a proposal for colonial unity in the face of the coming war with France. The plan, called the Albany Plan of Union, called for the creation of new layers of government, including a president general who would be appointed by the Crown and exercise broad powers over relationships with the natives making war and governing the frontier areas until new colonies were created. A grand council was also proposed whose members would be appointed by the existing colonial assemblies and whose representation would be determined by the amount of financial contribution or taxes paid to the organization. The plan for a federated colonial government never got off the ground. It was approved by the delegates at the Albany Congress, but not a single colonial assembly ratified it. It was doubtful, even if approved by the assemblies, that royal officials would have approved of this consolidation of power in America. Instead, the Board of Trade in London proposed a creation of a colonial council composed of one representative from each colony. That body would be responsible for raising militia forces and appropriating the cost amongst the membership. This idea elicited little enthusiasm in America, where the colonists preferred to have British regulars fight their battles with money raised on the other side of the Atlantic. The Albany Plan of Union set an example that would later be followed by such gatherings as the Continental Congress. An article on Constitution.org illustrates how concise and easily understood a major transformation can be established, stating that in the early 1750s, rivalry between England and France over who would control the North American continent led inexorably to what is known as the French and Indian Wars. This conflict lasted from 1756 to 1763 and left England the dominant power in the area that now comprises the eastern United States and Canada. Aware of the strains that war would put on the colonies, English officials suggested a, quote, union between ye royal, proprietary, and charter governments, end quote. At least some colonial leaders were thinking along the same lines. In June 1754, delegates from most of the northern colonies and representatives from the six Iroquois nations met in Albany, New York. They were adopted a, quote, plan of union, end quote, drafted by Benjamin Franklin of Pennsylvania. Under this plan, each colonial legislator would elect delegates to an American Continental Assembly presided over by a royal governor. The plan is noteworthy in several respects. First of all, Franklin anticipated many of the problems that would beset the government created after independence, such as finance, dealing with Indian tribes, control of commerce, and defense. In fact, it contains the seeds of true union, and many of these ideas would be revived and adopted in Philadelphia more than 30 years later. After the plan was unveiled, the Crown did not push it, since British officials realized that, if adopted, the plan could create a very powerful entity that His Majesty's government might not be able to control. The royal counselors needed not have worried. The colonists were not ready for union, nor were the colonial assemblies ready to give up their recent and hard-won control over local affairs to a central government. That would not happen until well after the American settlements had declared their independence. Listed for further reading, Robert C. Newbold, The Albany Congress and the Plan of Union of 1754, copyright 1955. And a footnote, the 13 colonies were divided at the time. Among those founded or ruled by royal charter were Virginia, New York, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, New Jersey, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia, and also those that were proprietary in nature, that is, owned by a family or individual, Pennsylvania, Delaware, and Maryland, and those that were governed under charters, Rhode Island and Connecticut. Constitution Org continues with describing the concise and easily understood Albany Plan of Union. It is proposed that humble application be made for an Act of Parliament of Great Britain, by virtue of which one general government may be formed in America, including all the said colonies, within and under which government each colony may retain its present constitution, except in the particulars wherein a change may be directed by the said act, as hereafter follows. 1. That the said general government be administered by a president general to be appointed and supported by the Crown, and a grand council to be chosen by the representatives of the people of the several colonies met in their respective assemblies. And 2. That within months after the passing of such act, the House of Representatives that happen to be sitting within that time, or that shall be especially for that purpose convened, may and shall choose members for the Grand Council in the following proportion. This article lists the numbers of members for the Grand Council listed by state, which varies from 2 to 7. And a total of 48, 35 points, i.e., 2 to 5 line paragraphs, describe this plan of union as mentioned earlier, drafted by Benjamin Franklin. The book titled The American Promise, A Compact History, third edition, by Rourke, Johnson, Cohen, Stage, Lawson, and Hartman, copyright 2007 by Bedford/St. Martin's, succinctly describes the Albany Congress and intercolonial defense on pages 134 to 135. Thomas Hutchison, the Seven Years' War, Sugar and Stamp Acts, and many other issues during the tumultuous times of 1754 to 1775 are covered in Chapter 6. The next episode will continue with the British and colonial conflicts and cover Bacon's Rebellion. Again, thanks to Lynn and Kathy Bergman, Marianne Hurst, and Brian Corr for their kindness and generosity with funding a building for our library. Also, again, thanks to Fuang for his volunteering as a math tutor in geometry, Algebra 1 and 2 in pre-calculus. The kindness and generosity of people such as these volunteers significantly adds to the success of New Heights Educational Group. We currently have 56 very much appreciated volunteers. Please tune in next Friday for Sadia Ehaz's show at 6 p.m. Saturdays, you can join host Kaden Behan for her show starting at 6 p.m. And Sundays, you can join me, Kathy Woodring, for my show at 11 p.m. Good night and have a great week.
Raise me up to more than I